You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. In recent years, you've probably heard a lot more about contact sports and concussions. There's enough concern that a fair number of parents are deciding against letting their kids play rough sports because of the fear that concussions will lead to permanent neurological damage. It's a complete swing away from the attitudes of the past of just walk it off, just shake it off. There's a new book which suggests that, yes, concussions are very serious, but there's a lot of misinformation about them out there. The book is called Back in the Game: Why Concussions Don't Have to Doesn't Why a Concussion Doesn't Have to End Your Athletic Career. The authors are Dr. Jeffrey Kutcher, a sports neurologist who went through the University of Michigan Neurology Residency Program, and Joanne Kirstner, who is sports journalist in residence at Michigan State University. Before we get too far into this discussion, why do you think this book was needed?
Well, it was needed, frankly, because I've been doing this for over a decade, and I began taking care of patients back when nobody cared. And it was hard to get people to understand this is a serious issue, not just concussions, but long-term brain health. With awareness, and we have great awareness now, and I think we're in a much better place than we were 10 years ago when I started doing this. But with awareness became oversimplification of messages and really sort of agenda-driven discussions, which have ended up causing more harm to my patients in the long run. So this book is really an evolution. It captures the conversations I've been having with my patients for over a decade.
This sounds like a contrarian view, and I thought, wow, that's a really good topic to sell a lot of books if you're, you know, kind of going against the grain. Is this just a contrarian view to the popular media coverage and the perceptions of the public, or is there something more than that?
Well, I think there's something definitely more to it. I came about this in a different way in that I was a Knight Wallace Fellow here at the University of Michigan. So I immersed myself in concussions in all facets. I heard from the patients. I heard from the parents of patients. I read the coverage. I read the journals. And I realized that what I was hearing as a journalist and then covering as a journalist did not match up what I was seeing. Taking a contrarian view was not something that we did just to say, aha, we're going to go left when everyone's going right. It's really that we needed to get back to talking about the truth, what we know medically and scientifically based, and also parse a lot of the mythology that's now springing up around concussions.
Facts are such sticky things. We now think of concussion as a traumatic brain injury, and I suppose it is. But you write that its symptoms generally are not as long-lasting if it's treated properly and quickly. So define concussion for us as we should understand it.
Sure. One of the big misunderstandings now, the word concussion is used to describe a lot of different things and not just concussion itself. A concussion is a transient injury. It does resolve. There are other things that can happen in addition to concussion. Post-concussion syndrome, for example, one of the biggest things we deal with in our clinic every single day are people that have been treated as if they're concussed when they actually have post-concussion syndrome, and the treatment is different. And people will never get better if they are treated as if they're concussed sort of forever. And then the third thing that concussion is often misused for are the long-term effects from repetitive brain injury. And that really is the big issue. I want my patients to get through their athletic career with their brain intact. And that's not a concussion problem. That's a repetitive hit problem. As a matter of fact, the movie Concussion was not about concussion, right? It was about chronic traumatic encephalopathy and the long-term effects of playing sports. That's a good example of how the term is misused.
You noticed a difference between definite concussion and probable concussion. Can you explain those differences and what that means?
Yeah, absolutely, because you know concussion is a diagnosis we make as physicians. It's a clinical diagnosis based on history and examination. There is not a confirmatory test. Every time we make a diagnosis, whether we actually describe it or not, in our minds we are assigning a degree of certainty. This is a definite concussion, a probable or a possible. We've written about this. This is a published schema. This is not just me making this up. The idea is really quite simple. If there is no other possible explanation for how the patient is feeling or how they're presenting to you in clinic, no other explanation at all, and there's a clear mechanism, that's a definite concussion. That's actually more rare than people think. When you look at how people play sports, symptoms they may have before the game, during the game, after the game, other things going on in their lives, there's usually something else on the list that could be possible. If those things are not as possible as concussion, then the concussion becomes a probable concussion. If you have things that are more possible than concussion, then it's a possible concussion. So that's not just a semantic sort of gymnastics. It really becomes helpful when you're looking at somebody's overall history of concussion, how many they've been diagnosed with, what are we actually talking about going on in these individuals?
Let's talk about being out on the field. Joanne, a parent's first instinct is to give the kid aspirin or Tylenol or ibuprofen to relieve the headache that they might get. The book notes that there are better choices than others when you come to do that. And I was really surprised about that. And then when I got to thinking about what ibuprofen does versus what Tylenol does, for example. So can you guys explain that to us? First of all, let's just clear it up. What don't you give your kid after a possible concussion to get rid of the headache?
Well, the first thing you're concerned about is something more than a concussion, specifically a bleeding event inside of the skull. If that's present, you do not want to give somebody medication that's going to interfere with the clotting cascade. So anything that interferes with platelets, the things that float around in our blood and help form clots. So ibuprofen or Motrin, Aleve or Naproxen, those types of medications can do that. Tylenol does not. My preference would be, if somebody's diagnosed with concussion, is really to avoid giving the medications for about 24 hours because you do want to see what's unfolding in front of you. At that point, the risk of there being a bleeding event is very, very small, if not, you know, minimal, close to zero. And using a medication like that can actually be beneficial for the patient.
Why is quick treatment of a concussion really necessary?
Well, for a few reasons. Number one, you want to pull anyone off the field or practice facility that you think could have a concussion. Now, first of all, that is state law, and it's kind of the cliche of when in doubt, sit it out. So number one, you don't want someone participating in something if you think they might have a concussion. Number two, that then hopefully gets that athlete into the process of being checked out by, at best, having a, you know, a certified athletic trainer there, or if it's just a parent or a coach saying, hey, how do you feel? What's going on? And allowing the athlete of any age to be honest, like, you know, I don't feel that great or I feel strange. And you have to remember that a concussed athlete might not be aware they're hurt. So it's kind of on the person who's in charge of kind of determining, you know, they don't seem right. I need to get them proper medical care. So diagnosing it quickly is great because you don't want to leave someone in there to get more hits and to get further injured.
So when we say quickly, I mean, do you say sit on the bench or do we just say, hey, you need to go to the doctor right now?
Well, it depends because you got to remember concussion symptoms do not manifest immediately. So it's not like, wow, you broke your bone. There it is. Concussion symptoms can manifest over a couple of hours. So someone might get a hit and say, hey, you know, you don't look right or whatever. Come sit down. Oh, no, no, coach. I'm fine. I'm fine. Put me back in. You can't take them at their word. You have to say, you know what, we're keeping you out. We're going to evaluate you and see how it is. Now, obviously, if someone has lost consciousness or there's some event that you can clearly say this is not right, then you get them immediate care.
So your book basically is encouraging people to not overreact and just drop out of sports, and we'll get to some of that. But when I hear sports professionals and repeated concussions leading to neurological damage, why wouldn't I worry about my kid on the soccer field or playing football being damaged for life? I mean, isn't it safer just to keep them off the field?
Well, so is it safer to keep them off the field? Certainly, but it's also safer not to drive them to the field in the first place. Our lives have risks, and we derive benefits from a lot of activities, and sports is definitely one of them. What we are advocating for is critical thought and a complete picture of what is actually the risk. It would surprise a lot of people to hear that the majority of NFL players who played 5 years or more in the league don't have a problem. That gets lost in the conversation. All we hear about are the bad cases. I've been taking care of former professional athletes for a long time. I've seen many, many hundreds of them. The vast majority are doing just fine, but you don't hear that. And then you want to put that in perspective for, well, that's professional athletes. What about my kid who wants to play up through high school football? That's a different level of exposure altogether. So we do want to take these things seriously, but we don't want to be handcuffed by a lack of information and a lack of critical thought.
I want you to both jump in here. A good part of the book talks about the loss of sports in someone's life and what kind of impacts that might have on their well-being, that quitting because of a concussion can, in some cases, lead to people experiencing depression, even consider suicide. And I don't mean to be over dramatic, but it kind of leaves you with the perception of, oh, great, I've got to choose between neurological damage to my kid or the possibility of losing that kid to suicide. Sort that out for us.
Well, it's think about it this way. The things that we participate in as children, whether it be band or drama or playing on the tennis team, those all give us critical parts of our being. It's a tribe. It's who we belong to. It's our friends. It gives us status within our communities and our schools. And so if you say, don't do this, I'm taking this away from you because you probably shouldn't be playing anymore or I'm afraid of you playing, we're actually kind of saying, you know what? don't do that anymore, and then don't worry about it. But then you don't see your friends. You don't have the social status. You don't have the physical outlet to go out there and maybe burn off some of that energy that you're not going to get in other places. And I just know, you know, from being a female that grew up playing sports, that was a really critical part of my development of leadership skills, learning how to win and lose. And I'm not saying you can't get that from the chess team or forensics or other things, but for me, that part of my development helped me as an adult. So when you kind of weigh this whole, should I do this or not do that, that's a huge thing that you might be missing out on.
So you've experienced professionals who've actually dealt with depression after they lost or had to leave their sport. Tell me about how that works in this whole explanation.
Yeah, you know, it's absolutely critical that we understand the complexity here. I mean, I'll start with a simple study that was published about 3 years ago in 2013 or so that looked at former NFL players that played from the 60s to the 80s. These played more than 5 years, so they're fully vested pension players. The suicide rate in that population until 2008 was less than half of the general population. Think about that for a moment. Football players, NFL players played in the 60s to the 80s when they were knocked out in the first quarter, played in the second quarter. That population had less than half the suicide rate of the general population until 2008. What happened in 2008 is we started talking about it. The messages started to become oversimplified. People started worrying about, am I going to commit suicide? I'm depressed. And there is a known concept called the suicide contagion that is very well described, that if you oversimplify suicide, if you don't, if you're not careful about the messaging, that you can actually promote suicide in that population. So I see that in my clinic, whether it's a professional athlete, a former college athlete, or even a current high school kid who's playing and his parents are concerned. They come to me and their chief complaint is, I don't want to commit suicide. You ask them, well, have you ever thought about it? And they're like, well, no. Well, then why are you thinking about it? Because I saw Junior Seau on ESPN. That's the conversation we need to be having. You know, what are we really doing out there? And let's face it. I mean, coming down from any career, whether it's a radio journalist or a physician or a professional athlete, there's transition in that. You magnify that hundredfold by putting that in a young person at age 30, 32, who was a star, who's, you know, a known entity and has this whole persona around what they do. Take that away from them like that. That becomes an issue that really just drives that whole process.
So what's the bottom line here? What do you want athletes or parents of athletes to learn from the book?
Mainly, get good information and don't make assumptions. We really have a void right now of critical thought and a comprehensive approach. So seek out answers from people who can put everything in perspective for you, all sides of the equation.
That's Jeffrey Kutcher and Joanne Gerstner. They wrote the book, Back in the Game, Why Concussion Doesn't Have to End Your Athletic Career. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.